streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Welcome into the Illini Inquirer podcast. Took us a little longer this week to get Mike Kotulip on, but I'm happy we got him going into a weekend. Mike, we have so much to talk about here on the Illini Inquirer podcast. King Kofi is returning to college basketball. A long-awaited return after a three-game suspension. A huge recruiting win for Brad Underwood. Want to ask you a little bit about that. And a big-time tournament in Kansas City, kind of the focal point of this non-conference for Illinois. But first, we got to bring it up. Monday, a disappointing loss, no matter how you look at it, 67-66 to a Marquette team that, hey, Daryl Marcel, we can qualify him as a Illini killer now. But I'm going to give you the floor right away. No Kofi Coburn wasn't there, but still, as a former player, as a coach, what do you kind of take away from that if you're a part of the Illini program?
Too many self-inflicted wounds. I mean, that really ended up being the story. 26 turnovers. Shot selection at times, 3 to 4 fouls that were 85 to 90 feet away from the basket. It's hard to win that way. It is, especially on the road, right? Especially on the road against a high major opponent, against an opponent that is trying to find their identity, against an opponent that has a coach that his identity has been creating that, you know, no pun intended, havoc. Like Shaka Smart has done in the past. And, you know, and especially without your National Player of the Year candidate, I thought that reared its head much more in that game than it did in any of the other games prior. But, and we'll get into the nuts and bolts of it, but Illinois was the better team. Like they're the better team. And it would be a completely different story if this was one of those, man, we just don't have the guys. Right? Like we don't have enough talent. We don't have enough skill. We don't play hard enough. It's not the case, you know? And I think a lot of times that would be way tougher to overcome night in and night out. You know, and I think you look at those self-inflicted wounds and part of you is like, man, the self-inflicted aspect of it just doesn't sit with you well. Because we did it to ourselves, right? You know, you're thinking that as a coach and a player, like we did this to ourselves. But the other side of that is, you know, okay, well, these are correctable. You know, if we correct these things, we know we correct these things, we win. And just taking that a step further, you can recognize those things, but you got to correct them. Like you got to take that step to correct them. And I think this is, I understand that. That they lost that game by one. In my opinion, that was the only way Marquette was going to win that game was by 1 point. They desperately wanted Illinois to win that game in a lot of different ways. And I just think that there's something about losing where if you win that game 68-67, this team is mature enough to understand that there are still things to work on, that they could have thrown that game away. But there's a certain feeling associated with losing that just you truly look at yourself and in the mirror and you're real with yourself, that certain things that happened in that game, it's almost like, hey, you know, the basketball gods were like 26 turnovers, you know, some of the late game play, like I can't allow you to win this game. I'm sorry. And I think that ends up being the story, but like you said, you get Kofi back and now you transition to Kansas City and you take what you can, you learn from it and you turn the page and you focus on Cincinnati.
Yeah, Mike, my question, sometimes it feels like fans want us to yell at coaches or players after these games. It's like, that's not our job. Our job is to get, you know, answers, like insight. And my question to Brad was, it wasn't like, do you bench Andre Curbelo at the end of that game? Because he's your point guard. He's your high use guy. He's got to have the ball in his hands for this team. And plus, he's got to learn some of these things that he's going to need to know in Big Ten play. So I asked him, what do you need Andre to learn? Because obviously this was a rough game from him. So what do you think he needs to learn from probably his worst performance, especially as a key part of this team?
Yeah, I think you can certainly say it was his worst performance. And Andre Curbelo would probably tell you it's his worst performance. I think that's the key, right? And I'm very passionate about the subject of taking the ball out of his hands late game, and I'll get into that. But the step that I think Andre Curbelo can take, we know what he's capable of. We know his abilities. There's no denying that. Preseason All-League, preseason All-American. And to me, that's all warranted. Yeah, I don't think that was people being prisoners of the moment or just kind of over-projecting. I think he is 100% capable of that, and he's going to be on a team that's going to achieve a lot of great things. But you can't – he had too many opponents against Marquette, and that's the best way that I can put it, is when you create – you already have enough stacked against you when you go on the road, right? When you play against a team that is itching for a signature win on the road, right? You already have that opponent, and that's hard enough. But when you make yourself an opponent, when you make the officials an opponent, you put too much on your plate for a guy that is counted on to steer the ship, right? And I think, you know, you look at the – I think you saw the common theme was that he has to trust his teammates. And I think that can be – there's a bit of a misconception there. And the way that I read it is, yeah, in certain moments, it's not just trusting your teammates. We're like, hey, you're taking the shot and you need to pass the ball. That's just – that's at a very basic level of trusting your teammates. For him at times, the problem that he can run into when it comes to trusting his teammates is he wants to make the pass from his angle as opposed to making the pass to someone else who has a better angle. And maybe it's like a – I want this to be my assist. There's a lot of stuff that goes through a player's head, but for a guy like Andre Curbelo with the abilities that he has, this is another point that I'll make. When you're on a really good team, right, your poor performances can be masked a little bit because you have other good players, right? Trent steps up, Coleman Hawkins steps up, and sometimes, you know, you can fall for thinking that your poor play can be covered up by these other good players. Not as a point guard. Like, that's just not how it works. And I think sometimes it takes a little bit to understand this, is understanding how much power you have as the point guard, as the guy with the ball in his hands. And you saw on full display where if those powers aren't used, in a way that benefits the team, it can sink the ship. But on the flip side of that, this guy has all the talent in the world to, when he uses those powers for good, this team can achieve a lot of really good things.
You're making it sound like with great power comes great responsibility, Mike. That's what it sounds exactly to me. Right. It felt like Mike, he wanted to prove that he is an All-American. Like, it felt like he wanted to prove he's Io, and he just has to be Curbelo, right? And I think there's a growing process. Curbelo or Io dealt with this. He had some bad performances late in games early in his career. I remember Cassius Winston coming into State Farm Center and having nine turnovers in a loss where they were a top 10 team. So these are going to happen. It's just how do you come back from them? So I'm really interested to see that. To me, Mike, it did feel like, and the Marquette crowd was good. It was a really cool setup with the students on kind of both ends, both baskets. But it looked like the first game for Curbelo and Hawkins in front of a crowd, like of a real true road crowd. And did you see that? Did you think that played a role at all?
Yeah, I think I'll give a player a pass on that for like the first couple, 6 to 8 minutes, because it's jarring, it's a shell shock, especially when you haven't dealt with it at the college level yet. But to me, that wasn't the story with Andre Curbelo. And maybe the crowd factors into it, but he lost his mind. He lost his mind in the second half. And if you stick around for the film breakdown, I'll show you the exact moment it happened. Where it really went south. But and you could see Coleman Hawkins was sped up, at the beginning. He was turning over a little bit. But Coleman Hawkins, here's the difference. Coleman Hawkins can be a loose cannon at times too. But that's kind of built into his role. He's the fly around guy, keep balls alive. And like, you can have that sort of makeup as your personality, but as the point guard, you can't have that. So the louder the crowd gets, the more they get on you. Like, you can't have these personal vendettas out, to prove people wrong. And you saw that. I thought this is where he, last year compared to this year, you see a lot more predetermining what he's going to do on a possession, where last year I thought he had a lot more, inventiveness, where it was like, I am reading the defense and making the play. now you start, and this is the part that we're, you know, when you have more responsibility, especially as a scorer, you start to try to find that balance, right? Okay, like, do I need to score this possession? Do I need to, but it still all comes back to reading what's there and being okay with the good pass and not trying to prolong things to get the great one, because it may not happen. And it may turn into a turnover. But I'll make this point before we transition and before we move on. The get the ball out of his hands at the end of the game narrative. This is something I'm very passionate about with Andre Curbelo. This is much less of a get the ball out of his hands thing and much more of a just make the simple play thing. And with a guy that has that type of ability, you know, preseason all league, preseason all American, you'd much rather just, you know, have to rely on him to do those things because he's proven that he can do it, as opposed to trying to move things around, right, get him off the ball. That's too much. And you have teammates, you heard Trent after the game, they trust him, mm-hmm. you know, and they want the ball in his hands at the end of the game too. And here's the way that you have to look at it. You want the ball in your hands. You want the ball in the hands of the person that commands the most attention at the end of the game. And that's in, no matter how you feel about it, that's Andre Curbelo. It is. And in order to hit a shot at the end, to get the look that you're looking for at the end, what guy can get two guys to commit? And we saw that he's capable of doing that because about three of his turnovers were from just trying to dribble through said guys.
Right.
So at the end of a game, can you have a guy on the floor that can get multiple people to commit and get you the shot that you want? And I'll walk through it, okay? Let's say you want Trent, because I heard a lot of like, get the ball in Trent's hands. And we can't
I said, Mike, he's got to have a touch on a possession, right?
Like, for sure.
I didn't think Trent needs to have the ball and create for himself. But like at some point, I thought Trent or Jacob Grandison need to have the ball in their hands on one of these possessions.
For sure. And I think you're exactly right. I think the way that you can do that is utilizing Andre Curbelo in a way that commands that attention, right? He draws the guys. And then it's on him to make that read. As a coach, like, that's not on the coaches. You have a player on the floor that just has that much gravity. You put him in a position to deal with that pressure and make the play. And here's the thing, right? Let's say the roles are reversed. Right? Okay, we want Trent Frazier with the ball in his hands and taking the last shot at the end of the game. If it's a 1-4 low, if you have four guys on the baseline, maybe that works, right? You let Trent dance a little bit and then he takes a shot. Is that like Trent's strength? Is that his greatest strength? It's not. But is he capable of doing it? Yeah. But here's the thing. If you run anything else that brings other bodies towards Trent, now the guy that you wanted to take the shot has to give the ball up. So you put it in Andre Curbelo's hands, because if he's off the ball, now you have a 14% three-point shooter that a guy can help off. So if he makes the read, okay, let's walk through it. He makes the read, two guys commit. Now you may have an open shot for Trent Frazier. But let's say Daryl Morsell's guarding him. So now the open shot goes to Coleman Hawkins, goes to Grandison. And putting a team in rotation is so important for a last-second shot, because not only are you in a position, let's say you take the shot with 4 seconds left, 5 seconds left, 3 seconds left. That shot goes up, and because they're in rotation, now you're in a position to get offensive rebounds.
Which Coleman Hawkins does pretty well.
And Jacob Grandison does really well. Kofi does that really well. So it's not just about like, hey, needs to be this guy, needs to be taking the last shot. It's how can we create as many options as possible for ourselves? And to me, that starts with Andre Curbelo having the ball in his hands, because he's the one that's going to command the attention.
Yeah, great stuff. I want to mention Trent. I think the story of the game would have been just how valuable he is. I think we talk about it defensively, but when Curbelo has an off night and say Kofi's there, if Kofi's there, they win that game, Mike. Obviously, there were a lot of, you know, inside touches that I think Kofi would have finished during that game. So it's just what a luxury to have another guy who can go for 20 when you need it. We saw it last year when Io was out, and we saw it again the other night. I mean, we don't talk about him enough as potentially, I don't know if it's second team, but he could be a third team all Big Ten guy. I mean, he's good enough defensively and offensively to be one of the better players, you know, top 20 players in the Big Ten.
Well, honorable mention last year, right? You know, he's right there, and you just see he was sensational. He was sensational in that game. And part of what makes Trent really special, obviously we talk about his ability to defend, his ability to still be more than a net positive offensively, but it comes from his focus. And I think that's something that Andre Curbelo, I don't want to keep going back to Andre Curbelo, but it's something that I think he can learn from Trent. Is the reason why Trent is just so dialed in at all times is because he doesn't let calls dictate. I mean, he had a call in the first half. He gets over a screen, or he's dribbling a ball. He comes over a screen. Morsell, like, sweep the leg and took his leg out. I mean, it should have been a foul. There's no question about it. You go back and look, it should have been a foul. Trent falls to the ground. They call it travel. Trent, like, may have it an initial, like, but give the ball back to the ref, get back on defense, because he knows he's got to lock back in for that end because of how much he's counted on that end. So we talk about the maturation. We talk about him going from scorer his freshman year to defensive stalwart, you know, really from then on. But I think it really does, like, he's so talented offensively. Mm-hmm. And really, he has the ball in his hands. I can't really think of a better secondary ball handler to have, because – and he had a few turnovers. Obviously, the big one at the end, and he had one in the first half where he tried to throw a hook pass all the way across the court, and it went into, you know, went into the A section. But he makes quick plays, and I think part of that just comes from Trent knowing who he is. And that's so important. Like, you cannot have enough guys on your team. And that's Jacob Grandison too. That's a couple of them. They know who they are and they know what their limitations are. And if you go back and watch the game, every decision that Trent made off a ball screen was in 1.5 to 2 seconds, right? Because the more he knows, the more that he prolongs that, the more trouble you can get into, the more the floor shrinks, the more guys recover. So it's like, boom, come off a screen, hit the back action, come off a screen, hit the roll guy. And he had a couple plays that were just the simple plays. They were the right plays. And I thought, you know, I mean, he only had 2 assists in the game, but I thought he just made the right reads that led to other plays. And, you know, he's just been such a calming influence, steady influence. I mean, whatever you want to call it. And he's a guy that truly, they're going to miss him. They're going to miss him a lot, man. I mean, he covers up so much defensively. It's like Draymond in a way. It's like these guys, you know, he doesn't get screened. He's always in the right spot. He knows when to gamble, when not to gamble. Like, he's just – he's an outstanding basketball player, man.
All right, it's 3 games in, Mike, so I don't want to overreact. Jacob Grandison took about 10 games really to get into the mix here. Knowing that, do you have any concerns about Omar Payne or Alphonso Plummer as we see more and more of them?
I'll start with Omar. I thought – you know, I know he was the 3-for-3, 7 points, couple block shots. Like, that's – I mean, that's – pretty much what you want from Omar Payne. I don't really see him being a guy that's going to give you like 15 in a game, or, you know, he's not like a 12 rebound type of guy, because typically he's doing the dirty work trying to either block a guy out or contest a shot around the rim. But God, I feel like I keep going back to Curbelo. But a lot of the turnovers that Omar Payne had in that game, he just was put in a tough spot. Like you got to understand personnel. We've seen that Omar Payne's strong suit is not having the ball at that elbow perimeter. Like, he's just not, that's not his strong suit. So, but he's another guy that I think for the most part just kind of knows who he is.
Yeah.
That
was his best game. Yeah,
for sure. I thought that was exactly what you need him as. Like, he sent one of the shot blocks into the block shots into the stands basically. And, you know, finished a couple dunks, you know, wasn't just forcing stuff around the rim, didn't have many opportunities to do it, but I don't think he cares about that. That's what I keep going back to with guys that know who they are. Now, Alphonso Plummer is a different story. He needs to find a way to be more effective on the defensive end, because if he's not making shots and he's not serving as that microwave off the bench, then it ends up just kind of being a net negative. Right. And I think at the defensive end, he's capable. And we talked about before, like, you watch the clips at Utah, it's just kind of like a focus thing. It's kind of just, hey, put yourself in a position to be successful. I think Alphonso Plummer, and this is kind of how I had to combat in college, you know, my freshman year, in practice, like, guarding Revonte, guarding Kendrick, guarding a lot of these guys, I had to figure out a way. Like, I just had to figure out a way, because it was never going to be head up one-on-one, like, damn, Mike's locking them up. But the thing that changed everything for me was taking charges on the ball. And what I realized was, and Alphonso Plummer, this is something that he can do, you just have to be better on two slides. That's it. You may not keep up with them for four or five slides. They might get around you. But if you can cut off an angle in two slides, they will do the rest. And that's just what happened. Like Rivante and Malcolm, these guys, when I would guard them, you slide twice, find the angle, they'll run you over. Mm-hmm. And you know what ends up happening? They don't want to drive on you again because they don't want to get another foul. Mm-hmm. And if you can become that guy where you're taking charges on the ball, you're in the right position, you can become more effective as a defender because he's just he's shown time and time again that he's the guy that like keeps trying to like rides you all the way to the basket and you're either getting fouled or laying it in. So find a way. And obviously he hasn't been the best making decisions off the ball, like, or with the ball in his hands. We've known that. So just settling in, playing your role, knocking down shots, and then finding a way defensively to make an impact.
Yeah. And I was a little bit bothered. I mean, he hit the one off the side of the backboard, which is never a great sign for your best shooter, but he was hesitant after that. And they can't have him hesitant offensively because, as you said, he doesn't bring enough otherwise. This is fun. I guess it's not fun with small sample size, but maybe it's too small of a sample size. But Damonte Williams bringing a lot defensively, bringing a lot on the glass. He prolonged so many possessions. But 4 of 20 shooting through three games, 1 of 5 from three. Any concern there?
We talked about it. I mean, this is when you start a season like you did last year, 10 for 15, you're playing with house money. Yep. And I don't know if this is – here's the thing, and I'm not saying that Damonte Williams is, like, percentage conscious because I don't know him well enough to know if that's – but I know a lot of players that are. Mm-hmm. And when you know that, like, another 0 for 2 night – sends you back, you know, another down another 3%, another 2%. Like, guys can end up thinking about that. Damonte doesn't strike me as a guy that really thinks about that, but I think it's just, it has to be a mindset of, hey, you've seen what I'm capable of shooting the ball. And, you know, I can do that and I can step in and knock it down, but I'll make the point when Kofi's not on the floor, there are less open shots out there. Yep. Right. And when Curbelo's not making plays for others, there's just less open shots out there. And a lot of his shots, I mean, talk about, like, I want to go back. I think it was the IUP game. One of those threes that he hit, maybe it was in the opener against Jackson State, but one of the threes that he hit was like dribbling to the right, guy draped on him, like right wing, shooting like a fadeaway. Like, that's not, you're not going to shoot a high percentage when those are the shots that you're getting. So, you know, I don't think there's any cause for concern because the thing that Damonte Williams is doing is making it up in other areas. Whereas just like for Alfonso Plummer, you know, if you're not making shots, what else are you doing? And Damonte, you know, 11 rebounds, 4 that he kept alive, really tough foul at the end, 90 feet away from the basket again. But again, more positive than negative with him, but he's always going to be a guy that's doing those little things. And those are things that you can count on, you know, but he does need to be a guy that isn't, you know, hesitating on 3-point shots. You've shown that you can make them. And when you are open, step up and knock them down.
Yeah, this guy, you just don't want us to 0 points offensively, right? This guy, you want 3 to 6 somewhere in there.
He's better. Yeah. He's better than that. Yeah, for sure.
And one last thing, it's weird to say this, but I thought it was kind of odd Luke Goody played only 1 minute because I felt like he could have calmed things down. Like, I don't know if that's because I'm in the Luke Goody fan club, but just you needed some offense. I don't think he would have been hesitant to shoot. And I just thought you needed some energy. Were you surprised he only played 1 minute?
No, I wasn't surprised. I mean, I'm in the Luke Goody fan club as well. And honestly, it was weird when the one press that he broke, you know, he caught it on the sideline and just kind of calmly made a pass up the sideline and got him into their offense. And, you know, I'm not going to take just that and be like, right, why don't you play him 20 minutes? Right. But I mean, that's just what happens in those types of games. Rotation shrinks a little bit. I mean, I talked about it. Like, you can talk about having 9 to 10 guys. It's 7 or 8. It always is. And someone's going to be the odd man out. And, you know, you err on the side of experience. Damonte played 31 minutes. I mean, he's kind of in that Luke Goody minute category where, you know, that's his position in a way. And, they really rode that, those starters, and they rode Damonte, and you kind of had to go with experience in that game. You know, whether Luke Goody was going to be such a positive where you have to keep him in for 18 to 20 minutes, I don't know. Probably not likely. you know, so those minutes really did kind of go to Demonte. Because you're going to have Hawkins on the floor. You're going to have Granison on the floor. So it's a matter of who do you want out there? And like I said, in those hostile environments, you kind of want to err on the side of experience.
Yeah, especially with that defense.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Should you ever set foot outside of the hotel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow, now streaming on Paramount Plus, only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.
Okay, Mike, Kofi is back. The All-American center, Big Ten preseason player of the year, has served his 3-game suspension. He will be back to play against Cincinnati on Monday night in the Hall of Fame Classic. How do you think this looks immediately? Is there any rust, do you think, or is this just Kofi taking the world by storm?
I mean, it changes a lot. Go back and watch any Illinois film from over the years. I mean, a lot of what they run is to get into a high-low scenario. And how much that opens up, we talk about all the time. He may not get the ball in a post-touch, but the defense is so sucked in to help. That's what opens up Demonte Williams shooting wide-open shots. That's what opens up 42% Jacob Granison from three. And I don't really see – you know, you're integrating a guy that is just an unbelievable post presence. It'd be a whole different thing if you're implementing a guy that literally has the ball in his hands. Like if Curbelo is out for 4 games and then you're trying to bring him back in, that's different because now whoever was handling the ball for those games, it's just a completely different person handling it. Now you just integrate a guy where, and you'll see in the film breakdown, Curbelo was a little bit reluctant to make some passes into the post, whereas he's not as reluctant with Kofi. And then he did make some passes that turned into turnovers that maybe Kofi ends up putting in or dunking. And we talk about all the time, you know, Kofi, a double team on Kofi is advantage Kofi. I'll say that till the cows come home. I mean, it just is. And, you know, it leads to higher percentage shots. It leads to higher percentage outside shots, inside shots. It's just, he brings so much to the table offensively by just being a presence and defensively too. You know, I think Omar Payne, he probably has even a little bit more of a propensity to go and try to get that weak side block than Kofi does. Kofi does it too, but you know, Kofi's sheer size and not only just blocking shots, altering shots, it raises your level of play and how dangerous you can be as a team. It's unbelievable. And he really does. I mean, I think he elevates Curbelo's game. He elevates Trent's game. And he is a guy that has that type of gravity, just like Curbelo does on the perimeter a little bit, handling the ball, getting guys to commit. He does the same thing in the post. And when you can have two guys like that, that's why why last year you're a top 10 offensive team in the country.
And I'm eager to see him and Coleman play off each other, right? I mean, we've seen really good. I know there was first half struggles against Marquette in a bad turnover in the fourth quarter or in the second half last game. But I mean, Coleman really settled in the Marquette and he's been really good early on in the season. So how do you think those two play off each other, Mike?
I don't think it's going to be an issue at all. I think, and that's part of the reason, because Coleman Hawkins' game is predicated on activity. And that doesn't matter who's on the floor.
Right.
Being active is just being active. He's going to keep balls alive. He's a right place, right time guy. You saw a couple of those balls get batted around in the first half against Marquette. It's like, oh, you know, who came up with it right there in front of the basket for a dunk, you know, Coleman Hawkins. And I think it's going to give him an opportunity to give you more open looks. And he seems to be confident shooting them. I mean, they're up 9 against Marquette. He buries one to put him up 12 off a really simple Andre Curbelo look. Just dribble, commit, kick. So he's going to have all the opportunity in the world because he creates that for himself without needing the ball. So it really doesn't matter who you integrate into the lineup. he's going to be active, and he's always going to reap the benefits of that.
All right, Mike, more high major opponents here at this tournament. We get to see more of Illinois, and of course, with its best player back. Cincinnati is their first game on Monday. Cincinnati 4-0, really haven't, they beat Georgia by 5 points. Georgia's 166 in the Kempom. They beat Evansville, Alabama A&M, and Presbyterian. So not much competition, but they've won all four of their games. What are you expecting against Cincinnati?
I mean, they're relatively untested. You can certainly say that. But again, here we are, first year coach, trying to implement his culture, trying to get guys playing hard. Cincinnati's always going to scrap. Doesn't matter if it's Huggins, if it's Cronin, whoever's at the helm there. That's just kind of their identity. It always has been. So it's a good, I think Marquette was a pretty good precursor for this game. It's going to be a lot of the same. They've shown some token pressure, full court. Who knows? They may watch the film and say, this is what we're going to do when they look at the 26 turnovers. But, their team right now, and it's an early sample size, but their defense is solid. And I think the tempo, the time of possession that they have defensively is attributed to, they're solid. They're solid on that end. But a lot of parts that they're trying to integrate, they got a lot out of the transfer portal. I think at one point they had like 6 scholarship players before they had to bring in just kind of a new wave of guys. So they're certainly not going to be at their apex as a team. So you take advantage of that, right? And it's a neutral floor. I'm assuming that just as Illinois fans do, they're going to travel well. But this team has some talent, and it certainly isn't a game that's just going to be a rule. I mean, if last game was any indication, you play a high major opponent, really anything's on the table. But I do like what Kofi can do in this game. Cincinnati has some length, but at the same time, you see time and time again, I'm not sure that really matters for the national player of the year candidate.
Mike, before I let you go, it was a big week. Illinois had some good news later. Ty Rogers signed with Illinois, top 60 prospect or top 65 prospect nationally. 6'6", 200 pounds, really versatile, loves his defense, Brad Underwood does. What do you think about what Brad Underwood's doing in recruiting and what you think this class can add with Jaden Epps and Sear Harris?
Yeah, I think you hear throughout the week, a lot of Illinois is a trendy, trendy school now. And that comes from winning and sustaining the winning. And they've done that over the years. And that's part of the reason how you get it done. And the other way too is when you're recruiting really, really good players like Illinois is, and Io DeSumo certainly helps. That's probably one of the best use cases out there. And part of that is not, it's not like Io DeSumo is the first NBA player to get drafted from Illinois, but it's different than a Myers Leonard. Myers Leonard, just from the way he was projected and his measurables, Myers Leonard was going to the NBA no matter what.
Right.
And I'll give Myers credit. He improved an incredible amount when he was at Illinois. But Io DeSumo, when he came in, it wasn't necessarily like surefire one and done. He developed. And a lot of that was him and that Illinois program and the way that they meshed. And it was just kind of a match made in heaven for his development. And Chicago kid, right, that's playing for the Bulls, there's a lot of marketability there. And you look at the guys that they have, Jaden Epps can, the dude can fill it up. Really talented. He kind of just looks like one of those guards in the Big Ten that as a lead guard, as a guy that can maneuver ball screens, that can get buckets, like those are actually the teams that have hurt Illinois over the years. You look over, a few years back when you're adding up all of Illinois' losses in the year, it's like, okay, Nico Mannion, all right, Cassius Winston, Anthony Cowan, like all these guys that are lead guards that can score it. That's a guy that you can add that can do that. And whether or not he's playing alongside Curbelo, like you can make that work, because if Trent Frazier's leaving, he's still doing a little bit of that right now. So you insert another guy that can score and just has that kind of dog mentality. I mean, you talk about that all the time. Sincere Harris, the same thing. Same type of thing, really good pedigree. He's coming from St. Vincent, St. Mary, one of the best schools in the country, notable alumni for sure. LeBron James and Ty Rogers, massive get. Those type of guys, right? Like the 6'7", 200 pounds long. That's all great. And you can fall in love with skill. Cause he's certainly skilled, But the thing that makes Ty Rodgers, Ty Rodgers, is just, it's another dog. Like, that's another guy that is, brings you so much versatility defensively and who he can guard a small, can guard a big. I mean, he can really do it all. And he's, you're putting in a position, there's just three guys that can make immediate impact. And when I say immediate impact, it's not necessarily each one of them is going to come in and average double digits. That's not what you think about when you think about immediate impact. Immediate impact is, I look at Luke Goody as a potential immediate impact guy, because in his freshman year, he's a guy that's in the right spots, plays hard. You know, that's the impact that you can make, especially when you have other talented players on the team. But if Kofi's gone, if Curbelo's gone, that impact could be even greater. So it always starts with recruiting, right? And I know transfer portal's kind of, I'm not saying it's made recruiting lesser because you can go out and get game-ready players, but it's still the foundation, right? I would assume Trent Frazier. I mean, it's still the foundation. Andre Curbelo, Kofi. I mean, those are guys that they didn't transfer in, right? So you these are kind of homegrown guys in a sense that that you know you churn them out, whether Curbelo or Kofi goes off to the NBA. Those are just more use cases for a team that's really, really turned into a winning program here over the last few years. And they, there's a storied tradition, obviously, but here in the last few years, certainly they've sustained that.
Yeah. And the thing like I think is underrated about the Brad Underwood era is those guys you're talking about have stayed for 3 years or 4 years. And if you get that, it's just that sustainability becomes a lot easier. And that's what we see with Purdue, Michigan State, for the most part. I know they've had their one and dones, but they just have guys, Xavier Tillman, Cassius Winston, that are this there year after year, I think is just invaluable. And those seem like guys, Mike, that can do it. And as you said, you keep winning 20 plus games, making tournaments every year, then you're more likely to get the higher ranked guy, maybe add a five-star in here at some point.
Well, I think the you hit the nail on the head. Guys that stay for 2, 3, sometimes 4 years, that's what prevents you from being a flash in the pan, right? The one off season that kind of looks like an aberration where you went to a Sweet 16 or you won 25 games. This is how you stack 20-win seasons. And the point that I'll make about it is if you have Adesumu for just his freshman year, if you have – Kofi for just his freshman year, Curbelo for just his freshman year. These are guys that when they're second, third year players, the incoming freshmen look at them, right? And if they embody the things that you want out of your program, then those freshmen, when they are juniors and seniors, when they're sophomores, then the incoming class, they already embody those things because the guys before them have. Like that's tradition, that's culture. You know, that's Villanova. That's a lot of these schools who do it year after year because these guys stay and the new wave that comes in, you know, it's either you get with it or get lost. Like, and I think that's kind of been the story over the years and how you see, how you've seen this culture grow. And obviously it's coincided with some winning.
Michael Tuip, you're the goods, man. We'll have a lot to talk about again next week with the Hall of Fame Classic and heading into the Thanksgiving weekend and a big ACC Big Ten Challenge game after that, Arizona in the coming weeks. Get to know a lot more about this team with their All-American back as well. VIP film room for you VIP members. We're going to talk Andre Curbelo in his game, so be tuned for that. But Mike, appreciate it as always, and we'll talk to you next week, man.
All right, man. Appreciate it.
Great stuff as always from Mike Letsuip. Great insight as always from the former Illini. And if you want more from Mike Letsuip, you can get it. If you're a VIP member, we just did a VIP film breakdown where Mike takes you through and you can see visually where Andre Curbelo's night went so wrong. Mike broke down some good clips of Andre, but also where Andre Curbelo, as he put it, lost his mind and why he got frustrated and didn't make such good plays and only stuff that Mike can really give us. So if you're not a VIP member, it's just $1 for your first month of VIP membership. And for you cyber shoppers, Cyber Monday shoppers, we're going to have a heck of a deal for you. So stay tuned to that as well. But thank you as always for listening to the Illini Inquirer podcast. Joey Wagner and I in Cedar Rapids, Iowa right now. We're going to cover Iowa football against Illinois. Illinois without Brett Bielema. So we'll have a post-game podcast after that. And Derek Piper and I will be in Kansas City. I'm going straight from Iowa to Kansas City to cover the Hall of Fame Classic with Illinois basketball and Kofi Coburn back for Illinois basketball. So we'll be all over the road this week for you guys. We appreciate the support that allows us to do that. So stay tuned to the Illini Inquirer podcast. And we'll have plenty of reaction and analysis to everything that happens with Illinois over this busy, busy month of November. So thank you for listening to the Illini Inquirer podcast. Give us a follow, subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Give us a rating or review. We appreciate that as well. But until next time, everybody have a great day. Take care of each other. We'll talk to you next time on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.